Good morning, everybody. This is our finale, the last speaker of the summer. And yeah, I was just talking to some of the guys that you think back. We've been here for 4 weeks, and you think about all the various Talmidei Chachamim that we had the privilege to hear from, and it's really Baruch Hashem. It's really an amazing thing to think about. And Achron Chaviv. Rav Daniel Stein is someone that who could really speak on just about any topic. My initial thought was to get him to come and talk about Geirus, because of the many things he teaches in YU Smicha, Geirus is one of them, and I relied heavily on his Geirus Shiurim in the Shiurim that I've given over to you. But his organization, his clarity, his breadth of knowledge is just it's absolutely breathtaking. And but what we decided to take advantage of instead was his incredible ability to weave together from so many different sources a cogent and important idea related to the parsha, which you could find in Sefer Chamudei Daniel. It's just breathtaking. Each and every week, it's another every single week is a home run. It's mamish unbelievable, and I'm trying to apply subtle pressure that even though it's a lot of work, he should keep on doing it and keep producing more and more volumes. Bezrus Hashem. So I want to thank Rav Stein. Just you should know, Rav Stein and I were in Shir together back in Rav Shechter Shir. You know, he was the Arisha B'Chabura then, and he's the Arisha B'Chabura now. So it's a really special zuchus to have someone of his stature come and address us, and we thank him so much.
But I want to thank Rabbi Leibowitz for giving good friends a long time, for giving me the opportunity and the privilege really to visit Camp Haley again and to share some good reiter with this very distinguished and chashuv ha'olam. You know, the Rambam writes in the Hakadamah to the Mishnah Torah, he traces the transmission of Torah from one generation to the next. And the Rambam writes there, as he's listing the different individuals who carried on the Messiah and passed it on from one generation to the next, he writes, V'afal pish lo nichtav Torah shebal peh, even though the Torah shebal peh was not written down, limdu Moshe Rabbeinu kula bebeis dinoi, Moshe Rabbeinu taught the entirety of Torah shebal peh, the Shivim Zekenim. To the Shivim Zekenim. V'alazah u'pinchas v'yeshua, Alazah pinchas in Yeshua, shloshtan kiblu mimoshe. Those three outstanding Talmidim received the Torah from Moshe. Meaning they did more than the Shivim Zekenim. The Shivim Zekenim, Moshe Rabbeinu taught them. Limdu Moshe Rabbeinu Kula Bebeisdino L'Shivim Zekenim. He taught them. These three Talmidim, Allah the Pinnacles in Yeshua, Shloshtan Kiblu Mimoshe. They received from Moshe everything that he had to give over. Meaning, the others probably heard the Torah and were able to repeat it. But these three Talmidim, Allah the Pinnacles in Yeshua, understood everything that Moshe Rabbeinu had to offer. And they were able to extrapolate from it and apply it into new settings. And therefore, they were mekabel for Moshe. But then the Rambam continues. Yeshua, shu talmidoi shel Moshe Rabbeinu, and to Yeshua, who was the talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu, masa Torah shebal peh v'tzivo aleha. He passed on the Torah shebal peh, and he instructed him to transmit it to future generations. So only Yeshua is described as talmidoi shel Moshe Rabbeinu, which is somewhat confusing. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam just told us, Moshe Rabbeinu taught the entirety of Torah to the Shivim Zekenim. Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua were the outstanding Talmidim in the Shir. In fact, we have another statement of Chazal, Talmud Elio, I think that Yeshua wasn't even the top Talmud in the Shir. It was Elazar, was sharper than Yeshua. Either way, Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua all had received everything Moshe Rabbeinu had to offer, were able to extract the principles from it, apply it to new settings, but yet only Yeshua is described as Talmido Shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Who Moshe Rabbeinu was Meiser the Torah, and who he instructed him to pass on the Torah to the next generations. Why are these other individuals, Elazar and Pinchas, the Shivim Zekenim, not described as Talmidim of Moshe Rabbeinu? Why did they not have the mitzvah to transmit the Torah to future generations? And the truth of the matter is, we're picking on the Rambam. It's really not fair. Because the problem goes back to the Mishnah that introduces Masechtas Avos, that tells us, Moshe kibbul Torah Misinai, Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah Maamar Sinai, Masuli Yeshua, he passed it on to Yeshua. Yeshua is a Kenim, the Kenim Unavim Masuli Anche Knesset Gedolah. And even though Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah to all of Klal Yisrael, to the Shivim Zekenim, to Elazar and Pinchas and others, Mishnah only mentions Yeshua. So Yeshua obviously was the outstanding Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu in somewhat of a different way than everyone else. It's not the Rambam's problem. The problem was already found in the language of the Mishnah. But the problem is a problem nonetheless. It needs to be explained. And it's compounded by another account that we have of the dissemination of Torah that's recorded in the Gemara Masechtas Eruvin. The Gemara tells him Masechtas Eruvin, he asks, Ketzad Seder Mishnah. How did Moshe Rabbeinu communicate the Torah that was given to him throughout their travels in the Midbar? So the Gemara there describes that when Moshe Rabbeinu received the communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the El Moed, he summoned Aaron into the El Moed and he taught him the Torah. And then he put Aaron next to him. Gemara's discussion of the Gemara was in his right or his left. But then he summoned in Elazar and Itamar. And he taught them the Torah while Aaron was sitting next to him. After he taught the Torah to Elazar and Itamar, he put them next to him. And he summoned in the Shivim Zekanim. And he taught them the Torah personally in front of Aaron and Elazar and Itamar. And then, if the Shivim Zekanim heard it, they sat in the Mizrach front. It must have been a very big, wide-based medrash. They sat in the Mizrach front. And then he summoned in all of Klal Yisrael. And he taught them the Torah in the presence of the Shivim Zekanim, Elazar, and Itamar, and Aaron. So it turns out when Klal Yisrael was hearing it for the first time, the Shivim Zekanim were chazering, Elazar and Itamar were hearing it for the third time, and Aaron was hearing it for the fourth time. But what's missing from this Gemara? The Meiri asks, where's Yehoshua? Yehoshua is entirely absent from this Gemara. Where's Yehoshua? Why isn't he mentioned at all? And in fact, he's the only one who's spotlighted by the Mishnah, Masechtas Avos, by the Rambam, in his Hakdamah to the Mishnah Torah. Why is he not mentioned at all over here in the Gemara Masechtas Eruvin? And the Meiri explains that it's because Yehoshua didn't need to be stated. He was tied to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the shadow of Moshe Rabbeinu. Wherever Moshe Rabbeinu went, Yehoshua was there as well. They were inextricably linked in all that they did. So Yehoshua didn't need to be mentioned because it was obvious. Of course Yehoshua was always there. Yehoshua ben Nun, Nar, Lo Yomish Mitoich Ha'el. He was Meshamish Moshe Rabbeinu in all that he did. So therefore the Gemara Masechtas Eruvin didn't need to mention him because it was obvious that he was always at every shir, at every lecture that Moshe Rabbeinu gave. Maybe, right after Moshe Rabbeinu received the communication from Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yehoshua was right there to receive it. He learned from Moshe Rabbeinu in all different contexts, not only during the formal shiurim, the formal lectures, the drushes that he gave, that Aaron was there, and it wasn't any summer, the Shivim Zekanim, and all of Klal Yisrael, he was there even in the informal times as well. And it was because of that that he gained more than the rest. As the Gemara tells us in the Sefer Brachos, Godol Shimusha, Yosef Milimuda. Sometimes a person can learn more in informal interactions with one's Rebbe than you can even during the formal interactions that you have during the shiur. You can learn how he conducts himself, how he speaks. Even in the Sichos Chulin, you can learn so much. And because Yeshua was learning from him in all those different interactions, Golo Shimusha, Yosef Milimuda, Yeshua Benun Nalo, Yomish Mitoi Chayo, only Yeshua was Zoyecha to become Yeshua Talmidoi. He was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu because he learned not only in the formal shiurim, but everyone else was there. Elazar, Itamar, Aaron, the Shivim Zekanim, the rest of Klal Yisrael. He was learning from Moshe Rabbeinu in all different contexts. And therefore, he was the only one to whom Moshe Rabbeinu was Meiser the Torah. He transmitted the entirety of Torah, the formal parts, the informal parts. And it was for that reason that Yeshua was charged with teaching Torah to the next generation. And he became the next link in the chain of the Messiah. However, Rav Soloveitchik, in the address that he gave in 1963, the Rabbinical Council of America, there's a similar piece, part of the Dvar Torah phrased somewhat differently. It's a recurring theme. Soloveitchik is at the end of the Sefer Divrei Hashkafa, in the last piece. Divrei Hashkafa explains that this is not only a pedagogic lesson, meaning when you're teaching Talmidim and learning from Rebbeim, we have to make sure to learn not only in the formal settings, but Gadol Shimusha Yosef Milimuda, to attempt to learn in informal settings. But it's really coming to teach us that there's two dimensions, two components, really, to the Messiah and to our performance of mitzvahs and to our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One is, as the Rav describes, the intellectual component. The stuff you gain during the shir. Right? The halachis, the lomdis, the kashas, the terutzim, the svaris, the chakiras, the nafkaminas, is the intellectual Messira, that's passed on. But then there is a second component, and that is the experiential Messira, the emotional connection that you have to the mitzvahs, and what it looks like to perform them, and what it feels like, and how a person builds a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu through doing the mitzvahs, not just knowing the Torah, or even performing it, but it's that emotional, the experience of doing it, that's an entirely different component to the Mesira that each person has. Mesira Veitchik in sharpening the image or the distinction here goes back to his relationship with the Yom Neroi. Mesira Veitchik reflects that he has much Torah that he learned from his father, from his grandfather, that he has on his own, and the halachas of Yom Neroi. With Kiyas Shofar, Vaydas Yom HaKippurim, is literally a ton, right, of brisket Torah, particularly from Mesira Veitchik on these Mayanim. However, he says, or reflects, that on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur itself, he's not thinking about the halachis per se, or all of his divrei Torah, and the Malchus, Zichronis, and Shofaris, the Lomdis, the Kashas, the Terutim, the Chakiras, and the Nafkaminas. He's transported back in his memory to the time that he was sitting next to his father in Shul, and what that felt like, to be sitting next to his father, and how his father davened, and how he felt sitting next to his father. That's the experiential component. And these two things are two separate dimensions to our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. In a different context, Salvechik in his hesped for his machatenister, for the Talmud Rebbetzin, Rebbe Twersky's grandmother, which was later on printed in Tradition. It's a fantastic read, and it's a masterful hesped, where Salvechik attributes this dichotomy to the Paskin Sefer Mishlei, which tells us, Shema v'ni musar avicha, my son, you should listen to the Musar, the lessons of your father, and never forget the Torah, the teachings of your mother. What are these two dimensions to our learning? There's the Musar, Avicha, the Torah, Imecha. So Salvechik again draws on his own experience, and he says from his father he learned one thing, from his mother something else. From his father he learned, just giving the example of Shabbos, which is the example that he gives, from his father he learned the halachas of Kiddush, the conceptual underpinnings of the Lamites of Melachis, and you know, all that that entailed, and all the different applications that we have in the modern setting, and you know, the understanding of the intellectual side of Hilchos Shabbos. But from his mother, he learned what Shabbos smells like, what it tastes like, what it feels like to go through Shabbos, that experiential Mesirah, that emotional connection, the spiritual side of the coin, if you will. That's what he gained from his mother. And fascinatingly, in the end of this Sefer Divrei Hashkafa from Salvechik, he reflects in his great humility that he feels, as a Rebbe, he was successful in imparting the intellectual component, the intellectual Mesira, the halachis, the lomdis, derech halimud, was something he felt he had succeeded in passing on. However, this experiential component, that dimension, the emotional connection to the mitzvahs and what they're supposed to feel like and what they're supposed to taste like, that he laments, that he feels he wasn't successful in passing that on to the next generation. There's a similar observation. It's made, there used to be a journal Dialogue. I don't know if it still comes out anymore. It was put out under the auspices of Rabbi Aaron Feldman and others. So in one of the volumes, one of the earlier volumes, in 2013, Rabbi Aaron Feldman printed there an article called Observant But Not Religious. Observant But Not Religious. And he was commenting upon bemoaning the fact that today, Baruch Hashem, we've had a resurgence, a renaissance of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, of Dikduk B'Halacha, even on the smallest minutia of Halacha. Baruch Hashem, people are medactic, people are educated, more so perhaps now than ever, and have access to information, and people are making the most of it, and they're being medactic, Baruch Hashem, in some communities more than others, but being medactic, Shmiras HaMitzvahs and Dikduk B'Halacha. But what he feels is missing, that's what he's commenting upon, is this spiritual component. They're not very religious. Observant, yes. Religious, not so much. They're missing a little bit that experiential component, that spiritual component, that emotional connection to the Torah and the mitzvahs. Unfortunately, it's something that we crave, but it's still lacking somewhat in our generation. And it's that part of the Mesirah that's not communicated in Shiurim. You can't get that by in the formal lectures of Moshe Rabbeinu. He wasn't communicating that. That wasn't going out to everyone who came to learn from him, to the Shivim Zekanim, to Elazar and Isamar, to Aaron. That didn't go out in the formal shiurim. It doesn't express itself in that way. The only way that could be picked up, the only way that can be imbibed, is in the informal learning, in the gadol shimusha, yosim elimuda, in the informal interactions. You see how the Rebbe fulfills the mitzvahs. You see the emotions that he puts into the mitzvahs. You feel together with the Rebbe what the mitzvahs look like, what they feel like, what they taste like, what they smell like. Then you can pick up that additional component to the Messiah. And it was that Yehoshua acquired more than everyone else, because he was with Moshe Rabbeinu constantly. The two were inseparable. And therefore, it was only Yehoshua who received both portions of the Messiah He was described as Talmido Shomesh Rabbeinu, was only he who was charged with passing on the Messiah to the next generation. Rav Soloveitchik, in the drosha that he gave in 1963 to the Rabbinical Council, so he understands that this unique aspect to Yeshua's relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu is conveyed in the Pesukim in this week's parasha, in Parashas Pinchas. As Moshe Rabbeinu is passing on the torch of leadership to Yeshua, so Kadosh Baruch Hu instructs him, V'somachta es yodcha olav, you should put your hand on his head and give him smicha. But the pasuk a few Pesukim later tells us, V'yismoich yodav olav. And Moshe Rabbeinu, instead of putting one hand, the Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, V'somachta es yodcha olav, he was V'yismoich yodav olav. He put two hands on the head of Yeshua. So he did more than the Kadosh Baruch Hu had instructed him. So Rashi there says, okay, maybe he did Ba'in Yafeh. Kadosh Baruch Hu told him one hand. He did two hands. The problem is, the pasuk concludes, Kasher, Moshe Rabbeinu did exactly as, Kasher Dibar Hashem B'Yad Moshe. He did exactly as the Kadosh Baruch Hu had commanded him. The problem is, the Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't command him to use two hands. But Yismoch, Yod of Olav, the Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded him, Samachta Es Yodcha Olav, one hand. How did Moshe Rabbeinu use two? And then the pasuk to conclude, and he did exactly as the Kadosh Baruch Hu had commanded him. So Soloveitchik explained that it's because earlier, and before the concluding pasuk, Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, "Yes, v'samachta siyotcha olav, but also v'nasata mehoidcha olav. You should put your majesty upon him." And Moshe Rabbeinu understood that that was a separate command from a Kadosh Baruch Hu to transmit something else to Yehoshua. V'nasata mehoidcha olav. It wasn't included in v'samachta siyotcha olav. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu used two hands instead of one hand in order to fulfill v'samachta siyotcha olav. Those two commandments warranted two hands. And therefore, he put both hands, and the pasuk concludes, exactly as the Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. But why do you need two hands? Obviously, one hand is not enough, which means that there's something that's different that's being communicated with one hand, the right hand, and the left hand. What were these two different things he was passing on to Yeshua? So Soloveitchik explained he was passing on these two dimensions, these two components, Taravedis Hashem and our Messiah. One is the intellectual Messiah. The halachis, the lamdas, the derech halimud, and then the other was the experiential masayra. What it feels like to do the mitzvahs, that emotional connection to the mitzvahs, the spiritual component, if you will, that's what he was passing on to Yeshua with the other hand. There's a medrash, there's also a Talmud Yushami, Sefer Shkalim, that tells us the Torah was given, Eish Shechera Agabi Eish Levana, black fire on top of white fire. What's it referring to? It's referring to the letters of the Torah that are black, written with Yai. That's Eish Chayra. What's the Eish Levana? Eish Levana is the klaf that's behind the letters. And the Torah was given Eish Chayra, Gabi Eish Levana, because in order to have Kedusha Sefer Torah, for the Torah to be kosher, you need both. You need the letters, but you need the klaf too, the border around the letters. Because if the letters bleed into one another, of course, Sefer Torah is puzzle. And you can't have floating letters, it has to be put on, you know, in the background, so it has to be put on the cloth, and there have to be certain margins that are preserved in order for the Sefer Torah to be kosher. It has to be cloth, and there are certain measurements and requirements for the cloth in order for the Sefer Torah to be kosher. So that's what the Mishnah is referring to, the Talmud Yerushalmi. It was given Eish Shecher Agabi Eish Levana. In order for a Sefer Torah to be kosher, you have to have the letters, you have to have the cloth too. But the very fact that you need the cloth, and there are requirements for the cloth, and it's referred to as Eish Levana, just like the letters, which are Eish Shecher, implies that there's something that's to be learned from the cloth of the Sefer Torah, beyond just the letters of the Sefer Torah. What is to be learned from the cloth of the Sefer Torah that can't be learned from the letters of the Sefer Torah? What could be more included than what's in the letters of the Sefer Torah? So Kedushas Levi explains, the Bedichever explains, that it's because the letters of the Sefer Torah represent the intellectual, external, technical requirements of the halacha, what Kadosh Baruch Hu expects from us. But then there's the emotional, the experiential, the spiritual component, which is represented by the cloth. That's represented by the white part. Why are there no letters there? Because it's hard to describe. It's something that defies description. It can't be articulated because by every definition it's an experience. It's an emotion. We can do our best to describe emotions, but you can't really convey what emotion is unless you feel it yourself. So there, that part of the Messiah, which is equally a part of the Messiah as the letters of the Torah, has no words. That part is blank because it's hard to convey. It's something that almost, you know, it can't be articulated in words, but equally that's a part of our Messiah. That's a part of the Sefer Torah to be kosher. You need that part of it too. In connection with this verse from the Kedushas Levi, they say over two Maaseh Lach. I don't think either one actually happened. So let's just get that out of the way, right? But one has to do with Menachem Mendel Mivarker. Menachem Mendel Mivarker was the son of Rav Yitzchak Mivarker. Yitzchak Mivarker was one of the Talmidim of the Rebbe Ravuna from Peshitta. So his son, Menachem Mendel Mivarker, is not as well known as Rav Yitzchak Mivarker because he was they call him Hatzadik HaShotek. He didn't say much. Some rabbis today, they're not known for their speaking, so he wasn't known for speaking. His biography is called Hatzadik HaShotek. Menachem Mendel Mivarker. And he had a childhood friend, Rav Avram from Trist, the Magen Avram from Trist, the Trisker Magen. They were childhood friends. And they maintained their relationship, even though they both became rabbis in their own right, they maintained their relationship, and they used to communicate every Erev Shabbos. So every Erev Shabbos, he used to send letters back and forth. So in order to send the letters back and forth, you needed a courier. You needed someone to transport the letters, to ferry them back and forth. So Nachman Mivarker asked one of his chassidim, who was a balabas, he was working the whole week, but take off from work on Friday, sit outside his office while he wrote the letter, composed the letter, and then he would take it to the Trisker Magid. Magen Avram from Trisk. And then he would sit outside of the office of the Magen Avram from Trisk. He would write a response, and then he would bring it back to Menachem Mendel Mivarker before Shabbos. Fine, so for years, this guy took off from work. On Friday, he sat outside of the office where Menachem Mendel Mivarker wrote his letter, then he delivered it to the Magen Avram from Trisk. Trisker Magid wrote something back, and he transported it back to Menachem Mendel Mivarker. But after all, after years of doing this, like his bittul Torah, I assume he learned while he was waiting in the waiting room, but it wasn't the best use of his time. So he said, I might as well learn something from this. They're obviously discussing deep secrets in Kabbalah and Chassidus. Let me learn something. Let me see what the rabbis are talking about. So he had the chutzpah to open the letter. He opened the letter and he saw that the paper was blank. So he went, before he presented to Menachem Mendel Mivarker, he knew it was blank. So he gave him the letter. Menachem Mendel Mivarker said, thank you. He said, Rebbe, come on. He said, I opened the letter. I know that it's blank. What's going on over here? Why are you wasting my time for years transporting letters back and forth? You're making me wait in the waiting room while you're writing them and you're writing nothing. It's always blank. He says, I don't understand. He said, we have a relationship, the Trisker Magid and I have a relationship that goes back to the time that we're children. He said, there's some things, memories we can talk about, shared experiences. Yes, it's true. But then there's a part of that relationship that can't be described in words. There's an emotional connection. And it's that emotional connection that we're expressing to one another in these letters that we write back and forth. And that can't be expressed in words. That's expressed in the blank paper. That's the Eish Levana that's behind the Eish Shechayra. That's what we're communicating with each other. There's another story they say in connection with this Kedusha Slavi. It was known as the Berditcheva Passport. These are famous stories. The Berditcheva Passport. What happened? There was once a chassid needed a passport to travel from Berditchev to Lublin. Whatever, he had to go through a border checkpoint. So he needed a passport. The problem is, if you registered with the government, for a passport, they had you on their list and you could be drafted to the army. He didn't want to be drafted to the army. So he went to the Rebbe. He went to the Rebbe, go to the Rebbe with everything. So he went to the Rebbe to find, Rebbe, can you produce for me a passport? Passports today have watermarks, so I understand that they're harder to counterfeit. Let's just put ourselves back in the times. We're talking about, right? It wasn't something that was necessarily as hard to forge as it is today. So he went to the Rebbe. Rebbe, can you help me with the passport? So he said, yes, wait in the waiting room. It's not for now. Comes back out. He hands him a folded piece of paper. He says, here's your passport. Said, thank you very much. He leaves. He walks outside again. He sees, as you already figured out from the first story, he sees the paper is blank. Now this is a real chassid. He goes to the checkpoint with the blank paper. And he hands it to the guard. That's a chassid. That's a chassid. Not only can I complain, but they hand it to the border crossing guard. And he says to the guy at the checkpoint, here's my passport. The guy opens it up. He looks at the thing. He looks at him. He says, ooh, a VIP. I didn't realize. He said, please pass through. And he gave him the royal treatment. What is the story there to convey? Obviously, it's not a true story. But what is the story there to convey? Obviously, I hope that goes without saying. Maybe a chassid will disagree with me, but I don't think so. It's there to communicate a message. And that is that sometimes in our avodas Hashem, we feel like we've hit a checkpoint. We feel like we've hit a brick wall, that we're just not able to get to the other side where we would like to be. Sometimes it can be in relationships with others, but sometimes it's in our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. How can we go beyond where we feel that we're stuck at? There's like this glass ceiling that's on top of us. So what Kedushas Levi is teaching us is that sometimes it's not in more externals that we need. Of course, we have to preserve the technicalities of the halacha. Kala kebachamura, that goes without saying. But sometimes people think that in order to reach the next madrega, we need more externalities. Things that are beyond what's required. But sometimes what we're missing is, no, we're missing that emotional connection. We're missing that experience of the Torah and mitzvahs, the spiritual component, which can't be described in words. It can't be expressed. It's on the blank piece of paper. That's the Eish Shechera, God with the Eish Levana. That's what's going to get us across the checkpoint. That's what's going to get us to the next Madrega. And it's this part of Torah, this spiritual component of the Torah and the mitzvahs. Not the external actions that I have to do, but either the spirituality, the emotion that I have to bring to bear in performing the mitzvahs, or how that affects my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that can't be described in words. That's what sometimes is referred to as Pnimius HaTorah, or the hidden parts of Torah. Now there's a reason, because it's inside, it's internal, it's an emotional response. And the reason why this is the hidden part of Torah, part of it is because it's dangerous. We all know why it's dangerous. It's dangerous because if you emphasize the spiritual component to performing the mitzvahs, that can sometimes come mistakenly at the expense of the external, technical side of performing the mitzvahs, because you emphasize one at the expense of the other, which of course is a huge mistake. That's an neshama without a guf. That's a malach. You can't exist in this world. In order to exist in the world, in order to build a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the way that he wants, we need a guf and a neshama. There has to be an external part that's doing the ma'aseh mitzvah, and then there has to be the internal, the spirituality, the emotions that I invest in performing the mitzvah. However, there's another reason why it's hidden. So it's dangerous. It's dangerous. It requires a shmira. The more important, holy something is, the greater shmira it requires. So it's a dangerous concept. But the other reason why it's hidden is not by design, but it's rather by definition. And that is because you can't express this in words. It's something that doesn't lend itself to be articulated. It's hidden because it's elusive. It's hard to define. It's the Eish Levana that's behind the Eish Chira. It's hard to describe. It defies description. And that's what's represented by the white parchment that's behind the black letters, is this hidden part of Torah that comes inside of me, that's emotional, that's the experiential, the spiritual side of performing the mitzvahs. That's what's represented by the blank cloth that's behind the letters. You need both components in order for Sefer Torah to be kosher. We need both in our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Perhaps if that's what the cloth of the Sefer Torah represents, maybe we could say a pshat in an interesting minig of the Ariyah Kodesh. Of course, it's a halacha you're supposed to wear on Shabbos, Big Day Shabbos. Different clothing than you wear during the week. The Gemara learns it out from the Pesuk in Sefer Yeshayahu, that one of the ways that we honor Shabbos, you shouldn't wear the same clothing that you wear on Shabbos that you wear during the week. That's how we honor Shabbos. As Rabbi Yochanan called Karu Mani Mechadusi, he called my coat my honor. So the way that we honor Shabbos, Kippur Shabbos, Kivanatoy, is by changing our clothing for Shabbos. Our clothing represents the attitude that we have to the event that we're going to. And then Shabbos also, we should express our attitude in our clothing. That represents a cover. That's how we honor something. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the name of the Achrayim that this really applies to a person's entire wardrobe. The Vilna Gaon was very marked about this. It says in the Maaser Rav, he would change everything. Like the song goes, from the Kepelach to the Fitzelach, which I'm not a fan of. So he would change the entire body. From top to bottom, the entire wardrobe would be different for Shabbos. However, it says in the Shara Kavonos from the Ariyah Kodesh that he was careful not only to wear not weekday clothing on Shabbos, but not Shabbos clothing during the week either. Very careful not to wear Shabbos clothing during the week, either unless he was going to, you know, some sort of special Sudas Mitzvah. But otherwise, he was careful not to wear Shabbos clothing during the week either, which means it's not only an idea of honoring Shabbos. Well, maybe it's because if you wear it during the week, it would take away from its special nature on Shabbos, but it seems to be that there's something that's a little bit more here. Maybe, you know, one of the ideas of wearing special clothing for Shabbos, I think there's already hinted to in the Kafa Chaim, when you quote the Ariyah Kodesh, and that is because our body is a levush. Our body is described by many Svarim HaKadoshim as a levush. It's a garment, it's a dress, it's a shell, it's a mask for our neshama that's inside. The world is a levush for the Ribbono Shel Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. We don't see it, it's hiding behind nature. So the nature is a levush. Nature is a garment. Nature is a dressing that's hiding HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement. So too, our guf is a levush for the neshama. On Shabbos, we have a different neshama. The Gemara learns out of itself is based from the Pasuk that on Shabbos we have Shabbos Vayinofash, on Shabbos we have a neshama Yesera. So if the whole week long our body is a levush from the neshama, on Shabbos, when we have a different neshama, we need a different levush to go along with it. And that's not the same as during the week. So therefore, the Ariyah Kodesh was machmir not to a Shabbos calling during the week, not the weekday calling during on Shabbos, because on Shabbos we have a different neshama, and the levush represents, you know, conceals what's inside of it, but it has to fit the neshama. So on Shabbos, when we have a different neshama, so we have to have different clothing. However, it says also in the Shara Kavanas, in the Ariyah Kodesh, there, Hekei quoted, an Inyan Dafka to wear white clothing on Shabbos. White clothing on Shabbos. Based on the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Loi, used to get ready, Erev Shabbos, quite early, which is always advisable. it's time of the year, it's easy. He would get ready for Shabbos early, he would shower early, and then he would get dressed for Shabbos early, and he would sit waiting in anticipation for Shabbos like a Malach Hashem. What does it mean he was sitting like a Malach Hashem? What way was he like a Malach Hashem? So Rashi, not in Masechta Shabbos, Rashi in Masechta Kiddushin, comments in the Gemara there, the Talmidei Chachamim dress in a way that's similar to Malach Hashem, Rashi there says, Levushim Levonim. They wear white garments. So too, Rabbi Yaakovish understood Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Loi, who was sitting on Erev Shabbos, getting ready for Shabbos, was also wearing, dressed like a Malach Hashem, a tufin, he was had a head covering like that, and sitting waiting for Shabbos like a Malach Hashem, as refers to the fact that he was wearing white garments. In fact, the Sefer Chemdas Yamin. Chemdas Yamin is a later Talmud of the Ariya College of 1700s, or at least purported to be. It's a very dubious origin. We don't really know where it came from, and the many people who claim that it's a forgery or whatever. But unfortunately, we have some customs that seem to only be found in Chemdas Yamin. One custom that we have that's only found in Chemdas Yamin is the Seder for Tu B'Shvat. The earliest source of the Seder for Tu B'Shvat comes from the Chemdas Yamin, which is a we have an uncomfortable relationship with the Chemdas Yamin. Some thought with David Hashem Eiri during Chodesh Elul only comes from the Chemdas Yamin, which would be super uncomfortable because we all do that. But they later found that Dr. Lyman did tremendous research in this, and he found out that with David Hashem Eiri comes before the Chemdas Yamin. Okay. The Chemdas Yamin, so he comments on this minute of the Ariya Kodesh, based on the Pasuk in Parashat Mishpatim, was Sevaru Eish, Chomash Vaseichem, Yom HaShabbos. Shouldn't kindle a fire in all of your communities throughout the day of Shabbos. Eish is the Rosh Tevis for Adam, for red, and Shachar, and black. What it's coming to tell us is, Vaisivaru Eish, don't wear red, and don't wear black on Shabbos. What color should you wear? You should only wear white. Should we be doing this today? So the Birka Yosef, the Chidah, quotes the name of the Panam Iris, the grandfather of Pisei Tshuva. No, it's Yuhara. For us to do it today, it doesn't jive. It's not consistent with everything else that we do. So for us, they will be. You are rather Kapachayim, though, recommends doing it. He says, no, everyone has to start somewhere. You want to start with wearing Levonim. Okay, so Kapachayim seems to have a, be more open to it. The Kamarna, in the Shulchan Ator, suggests that perhaps you could fulfill it in a discreet way by wearing your talus outside. The talus is, for the most part, white. So if you wear the talus outside, that's like a kiyum of levushim levanim, of the minig of the Ariya Kodesh to wear white on Shabbos. You wear your talus outside. Litvish people, yeshivish people, wear the talus outside to shul because they don't want to carry, because they're makfid and hilchus erevin, and they're not samif and erev in the town, because every erev relies on certain leniences. Chassidim are notoriously makel and hilchus erevin, but sometimes you see chassidim walking outside with the talus. That's deliberate. It's in order to fulfill the, in a discreet way, the idea of wearing Levonim on Shabbos. You have to be careful about this. I'm not recommending it. There's a fantastic comment from the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, the Degel Machne Ephraim of Parshas Noach, in connection with the Dar HaFloga, where the Pasuk says, they said one to another, Hava Nilben Olavenim, let us take bricks, Venisifor the Sreifa, we'll burn them in a kiln, in a fire. V'atihi lahem Olavenim la'oven, v'achemer hai lahem l'chemer. And they took the bricks, they hardened it in the fire, it became stones from which they could build a tower to challenge the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which they glued together with the mortar. However, says the Dagmar Machna Ephraim like this, he says, no, it's referring to two chassidim who say to each other, Hava Nilman Elevenin, let us wear white garments like the minig of the Ariya Kodesh. The Nisrafa L'Sreifa, like to act like we're on fire with Yiddishkeit. We'll dance and we'll clap. Vatihi Lahem Halevenin La'oven, but they're late. Their heart is not in it. It's only external. They don't really feel it. Their heart is a heart of stone. No, then, then this entire thing, which could be the glue in our relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, is just chumrius. It's just externalities. It's just superficialities. It's not actually the real McCoy. So you have to be careful. We have to be careful. Right? Most of us are not holding by this Madrega. But this was the minig of the Ariya Kaddish, to wear white on Shabbos. Even those who will follow many of the Minhag the Ari are careful not to do this in an obvious way. Certainly a kind of Yoruba. But what's the pshat behind it? Why? We understand they need special clothing for Shabbos, but why dafka white? So I think the answer might be found in another comment the Ariya Kodesh has in Shara Kavanis. The Ariya Kodesh said he was dafka careful to wear four white garments on Shabbos. Why dafka four? Why specifically four? So one pshat is because it corresponds to the four letters of the Shem Havaya. Dafka four garments, Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey. So they wore dafka four garments. However, we find four white garments somewhere else. Where else do we find? Who wore four white garments? The Kohen Gadol. When the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and Yom HaKippurim, he wore garments that were similar to the Kohen Hedot the whole year long, which was four white garments, the Big Day Lavan. So maybe the Rebbe Kosher says the inyan dafka to wear four wide garments on Shabbos is similar to the garments of the Kohen Gadol that he wore into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippurim. That's what we're mimicking. That's what we're attempting to emulate by wearing the white garments, is the Kohen Gadol as he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippurim. Because it wasn't only the Kohen Gadol who wore these begodim. Who else wore Bigdei Kohuna? So Medrash tells us, Parashas Bereishis, Adam HaRishon, when he was first given clothing, the clothing he was given were the Bigdei Kohuna. The Pasuk says, Vayas Hashem Elokim La'adam Le'ishtai Kosnas Ar V'Yalbishem. Right, after the sin of the Eitz Hadas, the Kadosh Baruch Hu makes clothing for them. So Medrash comments, those clothing, what clothing were they? They were the Bigdei Kohuna. In fact, Rabbeinu Bachya says there's eight words in that Pasuk. Vayas Hashem Elokim La'adam Le'ishtai Kosnas Ar V'Yalbishem. Eight words correspond to the other set of clothing that the Kohen Gadol had, the Bigdei Zav, which was eight garments. So it's worn by other people too. They represent a very high spiritual level. With the white garments he wore to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the gold garments that he wore when he was outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim for the whole year long, other than on Yom HaKippurim. And maybe what we're trying to do is emulate on Shabbos wearing the same begadim as the Kohen Gadol that he wore into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom HaKippurim. It's my own hatzah, my own suggestion. Take it or leave it. We see some chsidim, some kubal in the mach, but dafka to wear white. It goes back to the Yavir, it's very holy union. In Yerushalayim, the meaning of the Yerushalmis is they wear white bekeshas, but they have gold stripes. I investigated it a lot. Where does it come from? The gold stripes. Why dafka only in Yerushalayim? How far back does this Yerushalmi meaning go to wear dafka gold and white? I investigated it. Maybe there's someone who discussed it explicitly. I wasn't able to find it. My own suggestion, take it. It seems to me that if that's why the Ari HaKadosh said to wear white garments on Shabbos, is to mimic the Bigdei Kohuna. First of all, who was in the closest proximity to the Beis HaMikdash? Was those who lived in Yerushalayim, and they saw the Kohen Gadol in both settings, not only on the Yom Tov, right? They saw him, the white garments, the gold garments, so maybe they wear white and gold, specifically in Yerushalayim, in the vicinity of the Kohen Gadol, to represent both garments that the Kohen Gadol had. Both the white and the gold, and that's why it's a white bekesha with gold stripes. My own suggestion, take it. Fine. But maybe what we're attempting to do is to mimic or to attempt to emulate those begun that were worn by the Kohen Gadol when he entered the Kodesh HaKadosh and Yom Kippurim, that all go all the way back to the calling that was given to Adam HaRishon by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Why? And why did the Kohen Gadol dafka wear white inside of the Kodesh HaKadosh? So it explains the Tzadik and the Pri Tzadik on Shabbos. The reason why he dafka wears white is because white represents, as opposed to black. Black represents has a pigment to it. It represents the external actions that we do. It has a coloring. The whole week long, we engage in external actions, doing the technical requirements of the Torah and the mitzvahs, but also engaging in the world in a physical way. However, when the Kohen Gadol entered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that was a spiritual dimension that he was entering into. And in the spiritual dimension, we hope that the neshama shines through the levush that we have outside of it. We hope that it comes through, and in order to do that, we wear garments that have no pigment to them. You wear the white garments. That's the Eish Levana, that's behind the Eish Shechera. That's the spiritual component, the intellectual, the emotional, experiential component of performing the mitzvahs. And that's what was emphasized in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippurim. And on Shabbos also, we're attempting to, which is the holiest day of the week, we're attempting to connect with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in a spiritual way, in an experiential way, in an emotional way. Maybe we attempt to remove the levush that separates between our neshama and the Ribono Shel Olam, to make it as translucent as possible, to wear something that has no pigmentation at all, and that's why we wear dafka. Perhaps that's why we wear dafka levana. Rabbi Nachman has something that I thought was fantastic when I saw it in the Kutim Arai. He notes that blue, right, is somewhere between white and black. I guess if you dilute black a little bit, you get a kind of blue, but it's somewhere on the stream of colors. Yeah, I guess everything is somewhere between white and black, but it somewhere sits in between. So he writes that that's because Tcheles, right, is meant to remind us, we attach it to our levush, we attach it to our garments, and it's meant to remind us, when you look at the Tcheles, Uzchartim is Kovetz Vais Hashem, you should be reminded in the external world of levush, where we wear garments, where we engage in externalities, to remind ourselves what's the purpose of it all. He writes, Tcheles is Migosh and Tachlis, it reminds us what our Tachlis is in the world, and that's also to build a spiritual connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, an emotional one, an experiential one, a spiritual one. And that's what the Tcheles reminds us of. But the white garments of Shabbos, the black garments of during the week, are all part of the Torah. That's all what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants from us. That's the Eish Shechera Agabi, the Eish Levana, because we have these two dimensions, the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's the external obligations that we have, the technical requirements which we have to fulfill in order to properly keep the, you know, what Kodesh Baruch Hu wants from us. But at the same time, beyond the actions, we have to also develop that emotional, experiential connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that goes beyond words. It's something sometimes hard to articulate. It's perhaps highly personal. And that's the spiritual component to Avodas Hashem. And these are two critical elements. The pasuk tells in Parshas Vaschanan, we have a mitzvah perhaps to remember Maamad Har Sinai. We have a mitzvah to remember Maamad Har Sinai. So Ramban, in his comments on the Sefer HaMitzvahs, where he lists mitzvahs he thinks the Ram forgot, one of them is this mitzvah. Ram didn't count the mitzvah to remember Maamad Har Sinai, and Ramban is upset. What about this mitzvah to remember Maamad Har Sinai? So he counts it. Why did the Ram count it? Good question. The pasuk says, "Raki shomel choshmon avshchom yoyd pentishka chesedvam sheroi einecha." You have to remember Maamad Har Sinai. So perhaps it's because the Rambam felt that this mitzvah really corresponds not to the event of Maamad Har Sinai, but to the mitzvahs of the Torah themselves. Why? Because the Mishnah tells the Maseches Tavos that we all know, "Kol shecheach dover echa mi mishnosa." If a person forgets one thing from his learning, "Malav akasev kiyum eschayev benafshoi," he's chayev misa. Why? Because what has he violated? This pasuk, he forgot the mitzvahs of the Torah. He forgot what he saw, Maamad Har Sinai. So it sounds like from the Mishnah, it's really a mitzvah to remember not the event of Maamad Har Sinai and the Kol Subrakim and all the other things that took place around surrounding Maamad Har Sinai, to remember the mitzvahs of the Torah themselves. And that's why the Ram didn't count it as an independent mitzvah. Go together with Talmud Torah. You should learn Torah and remember the Torah. That's obvious. Therefore, you shouldn't forget it. He didn't need to count it as an independent mitzvah. But the Ramban did. But how does Ramban deal with the Mishnah Novice? The Mishnah tells us in Novice, this isn't referring to the event of Maamad Har Sinai, it's referring to the Torah itself. So Beryl Povarsky suggests in the Sefer Bad Kodesh, I think is absolutely endless. And that is that both are correct. Both are correct. It's both referring to the intellectual component of Limud HaTorah and remembering the mitzvahs of the Torah and the Derech HaLimud of analysis and not forgetting any of that. Of course, that's what it's referring to. But it's also referring to the other side of the coin. Because you can't have one without the other. It's referring to the experiential side of keeping the Torah in the mitzvahs. It's referring to the event of Maamad Har Sinai as well. And that's what the Ramban is reinforcing. You can't have one without the other. You need, yes, the informational, intellectual component, but you also have to have that experiential, that emotional connection to the Torah mitzvahs as well, which is the Eish Levana behind the Eish Shachar. That's almost so elusive that sometimes hard to define. And that's something that can't be communicated sometimes, you know, in a safer, sometimes can't be communicated in a distant kind of learning. That's something that can only be communicated in Gadol Shimusha, Yatsim Bimuda, through constant interaction with one's Rebbe, to be able to gain both parts, of this Masera. You know, I think this is what Rebbe Lubitz mentioned the last week of Yerzman over here. So if I could just say something about the, you know, it's unbelievable about the opportunity that you've had, and I hope that you appreciate it, is to interact with Rebbe Lubitz. Rebbe Lubitz is well known to all of us. We go back, further than some of the other people in the room, maybe, but he teaches Torah throughout the world. When I travel throughout the world a little bit, Rebbe Lubitz, he's well known. Wherever we go, there's some Talmud on some bus, on some interaction somewhere, because Baruch Hashem, he's teaching online and all the different contexts in which he teaches. And you probably were familiar with that before you came over here to Camp Kalim, maybe you had other interactions with him. However, there's a whole different dimension that you get by learning in person. By being stuck together a little bit over here in a camp setting, where you not only have the formal learning, you have informal learning as well, and you're able to be Mishamish Hamid HaChamim, which to have both parts of the Mesirah together with you at the same time is something that's really tremendous. And particularly because Rebbe Leibowitz, my Rebbe from Rav Schefter, is imbibed, has integrated not only much of the teachings of our Rebbe, but also much of the Gadol Shimusha, Yosem and Limuda, a lot of the personality, the emotional connection, he is able to transmit that as well. You know that when Pasuk tells the Sefer in Parshas Yisroi, Vayishma Yisroi, that's what the Parsha opens with, Vayishma Yisroi, Yisroi heard something. And he was prompted to join the Jewish people. So everyone asked, what did Yisroi hear? So Rashi writes, he heard about Kriyas Yam Suf Muhammad. So I'm all like, okay. Everyone discusses that. However, later on, he already heard about the Nisim that happened, and that's why he came to join the Jewish people. Later on, the Pasuk says, Yisap or Maisha Lechaisnai, Eis Kol Asher Asa, Lukim Lemitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu sat down with Yisroi, and he told him about everything that happened in Mitzrayim. He knew everything that happened in Mitzrayim. He read in the newspapers. That's why he came to join the Jewish people. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to sit down and chazor with him in person? He heard about it all. He read about it all. He listened online. He knew about it already. So Richard Meyer explains it. He says, no, because there's something else that's communicated by hearing it from a person live. You can hear it online. You can listen to all the different things. You can read things in different forms. Yes, that's all amazing. But when you hear something live, reading in the newspapers is not the same. When you hear it from a person who witnessed it themselves, that's an entirely different dimension. Then you get the experiential component, you get the emotional components. I hope you appreciated everything, the opportunity that you had here. I'm sure you built a wonderful relationship which will continue, and may we all be Zaycha to receive both aspects of this Messiah from our Rebbeim, to receive the intellectual side of the Messiah, the halachis, the derech halimud, as well as the emotional, spiritual, experiential component as well. And may we all be Zaycha, therefore, to become the next link in the chain of our beautiful Messiah.
I'm going to